Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC, with the Restaurant Guys.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis. How are you?
I'm well.
Yeah?
I'm well indeed. But I had an experience.
You had an experience? Imagine that happens once in a while.
I had a brand new restaurant experience for me.
Yeah.
And I know you call me a snob, but...
You know why I call you a snob?
Because I'm a little bit of a snob.
Well, some of that.
But I
have
never...
That's definitely some of the reason.
There's a guy named Oliver that worked for us many years ago.
I remember Oliver.
Who was really... He had come from the Cheesecake Factory.
He did indeed.
And, you know, by the way, we hire people with chain experience a lot. They have great training programs and they teach you a lot of good stuff.
And a lot of speed. They teach you a lot of bad stuff,
too. But they do teach you speed and efficiency and cleaning.
Actually, you probably don't even remember this, but do you remember what one of Oliver's pride and joys was?
Well, tell me.
Oliver, when he came in for his first interview, said, and I quote, "So, Oliver, what are your skills?" "Well, I'm a trained barista."
He was trained by the Cheesecake Factory, and he made a darn good cup of coffee, as I recall. But he kept referring to the Cheesecake Factory, the way we did it at the Cheesecake Factory was this, and the captains were like, "Yeah, but that's not how we do it here, so cut that out." But I had never been to the Cheesecake Factory, and they do a lot of stuff really well. What they do best of all is make money.
Yes, it's a skill like anything else.
But I have to say, there was some good and some bad. I went with my future in-laws on Father's Day, and the good was the company was great. We had a great time, but I think everyone was a little disappointed in their meal. None of us had tried it before, and so we all went into it together. We had a lovely time that day, but that's because we were a great company.
Right. That's because I'm funny.
And there it is. We had a great time. But the food was very interesting. First of all, I have to give credit where credit's due. It was spotless. It was spotless clean.
The place itself, yeah.
And the design was actually kind of nice. It was a nice restaurant design. It flowed well. I felt comfortable until the food started coming. But
you know what? And I just want to interrupt you for a second, though.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess some people take comfort in this, but every Cheesecake Factory you walk into has that same design.
I knew that.
And on purpose. I'm sorry. I'm speculating because I've never eaten at a Cheesecake Factory, so I can't say. But I'm talking about chain restaurants in general. They all are designed to have, even if the buildings are shaped differently, to make you feel like you're in the same place as you were in your hometown, in Dubuque, in Santa Cruz.
Well,
they're all designed to make you feel like you're in the same place.
Well, I think that I guess a lot of people are familiar with Cheesecake Factory because a lot of people go there. But I want to talk about what my problem is with Cheesecake Factory.
I like cheesecake.
Right, exactly. and my problem is that the food's not good. And
that's a minor problem.
No,
it's one
no.
of those little things but that, it, you know, just don't, most people overlook.
But it's more than that. It's that the food's not good, and they pretend like it is.
Mm-hmm.
And in some cases, I would say the food's not food, and they pretend like it is. And a case in point,
are they serving plastics? Is that what's going on?
Apparently, no. I mean, I can't accuse them of that directly, but I mean, if we got the cheesecake, let's start with the end of the meal. Let's start with dessert first. We got the cheesecake at the Cheesecake Factory, and it's topped with as much the whipped cream is as high as the cheesecake itself.
Mm-hmm.
Except, I've seen whipped cream, and at the outset, it looks vaguely like whipped cream, like a very firm whipped cream. And it was cold, and it was somewhat creamy. But, you know, I left a bunch of it on the plate, and in the little floret that they had put it in, as it came out of the whipped cream, quote-unquote, machine. And we talked for about 40, 45 minutes in a 70-degree room, and it never changed shape.
And you think that's bad?
Well, it's not cream. I've seen whipped cream. And so when you taste it, you...
Well, it's probably whipped.
Something.
And there's probably cream in it.
Maybe.
But it's probably not just those two things.
But so we had the whipped dessert topping, which, you know, when you taste it, if you pay attention, there's a greasiness in there that is the emulsifier that keeps it
from melting.
That's exactly
what it is. There's something, and the problem with that, when you're eating something like that, and I know exactly what you're talking about, is that, I'll call it slime, stays on your tongue. It doesn't taste right. It doesn't feel right in your mouth. And there's a different, and there's a reason why whipped cream became popular.
Because it's creamy and light and it goes and it's, well, anyway, so I just want to deal a little bit more with what I found there. It's fake food. We're in the middle of strawberry season. My future brother-in-law's cheesecake came with a strawberry on top.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lovely California strawberry. All right, strike one, but it's a big, they got to buy a lot of strawberries. Maybe they can't adjust for the 6-week New Jersey strawberry season. But they took this fresh strawberry, so they would have a fresh strawberry on there, not canned, and they dumped it in, like, the strawberry pie filling gloop, like so that it would stabilize. And so you took what was a fresh strawberry.
A lot of bakeries in the 70s used to use that stuff on, like tarts and things like that, the gloop, like, so their strawberry shortcake would stay pristine on top of the cake.
Right, and so they glooped their strawberries. Even though it was a California strawberry, I would have accepted that. And what I thought was interesting was that, and here's what I mean by they pretend like it's good food. We work hard every day. Lots of people in this industry work hard every day to make good food for you, to be seasonal. And I thought it was really interesting when they said, the waiter came over and he said, and our summer cheesecake special is the pistachio chocolate cheesecake. Because it must be chocolate season in South Jersey. Or is it pistachio season? I didn't have that quite straight. But then they present things as if they're good food. And there's a cost to that, because there are people who don't get to eat out very well. And people, you know, chefs have a great responsibility, and restaurateurs have a great responsibility now, I think, in our society. It's been thrust upon people in the last generation. And that's why when people source locally, source sustainably, source healthfully, and we talk about things like seasonality, there's something really there. And people take that lesson, and they bring it home, and they cook for themselves, hopefully, and they go to the local green market, hopefully. And so when you tell me that, oh, our seasonal cheesecake is the pistachio chocolate cheesecake, what you're saying, it's all horse hockey.
Right, it's all BS.
It's all BS. And it's not all BS. It's all BS at the Cheesecake Factory, I assure you. But it's not all BS, and it's important. My other favorite thing was, this was the only thing that I was like, this just isn't right. I had something that didn't actually taste disgusting.
Okay.
It was okay tasting, but it was jarring. I ordered the tacos. I ordered the chicken tacos. And the chicken tacos came with something on top of it that could have been sour cream, which is something I don't really like on my tacos anyway, but it's okay.
I don't have a problem with that.
It's okay.
That's
okay.
That's fine.
And then when I began to eat my tacos, I realized it was mayonnaise.
Oh.
It was aioli. It was chipotle mayonnaise. And I thought, there's mayonnaise on my taco.
Oh, that's all wrong.
Like, what is this, from Iowa?
That's all wrong.
So anyway, I called the waiter over and I said, excuse me, what is this on my taco? And he said, oh, that's a chipotle aioli. I'm like, oh, so it's sort of fusion Iowa, Italy, Mexico, garbage cuisine. So that was really disturbing.
You know what your big problem was?
The mac and cheese balls, not the meatballs. Get this, it's macaroni and cheese, breaded and fried into a ball like a meatball, and if that weren't enough of an insult, put over marinara. Yet another little piece of middle America Italian
marinara
fusion.
In the cheese.
Yeah, on tits on a bed.
Oh, like, you're grossing me out. I gotta tell you,
it was interesting. But my point is, look, it's inexpensive. That's fine. It's just that it pretends to be something it's not, and there are a lot of people that do work that we think is very important. And so, my experience with the Cheesecake Factory was it's not great. And if you want to stop in and say, it's cheap, but it's not great, let's go. That's one thing. But
kids, welcome here. Okay, there's a reason to go.
But it's the pretending like it's something that not that really sticks in my craw.
You know what the problem is?
What's that?
You broke my rule.
What's the rule?
My rule is never eat anything from a place that has factory in its name. Okay.
I think we'll all live by that rule.
Never put anything in your mouth that comes from a place with factory in it.
We are going to come back after the break with Top Chef Season 4 winner Stephanie Izard. She is the Top Chef right now, and you'll hear in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. It's 11:16.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC with The Restaurant Guys.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. It's Mark and Francis, the restaurant guys of Stage Left in Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. And our guest today is Stephanie Izzard. She owned Sila Restaurant in Chicago, and she is America's top chef.
Stephanie, welcome to the show, and congratulations.
Hi, thank you. How are you?
We're doing great.
We're great, but you won.
I did. Very exciting. Things have been crazy. It's been great just being around Chicago, and I was just at Green City Market, and everybody was really excited, so it's been fun.
You know, Stephanie, we're breaking our rule. Usually we have the winner of the show on the morning after the finale airs, but we decided that the winners were too hungover when we did that. So have you recovered?
Yeah, I've slightly recovered, but the celebrating still keeps going on, it seems. So trying to be good, but...
That's really tremendous. I tell you, for those of our viewers who don't watch the Bravo TV reality series Top Chef, who listen to our show, they know that it's our favorite TV reality show. And how real did you find the experience, or how relevant did you find the experience? You've owned your own restaurant. You've been a chef. You are an established chef. How relevant do you find the experience of Top Chef to be to an actual restaurant experience?
You know, I think some of the challenges are obviously restaurant wars or some of the group challenges. Obviously, you have to demonstrate your leadership skills as well as your cooking skills. But, you know, I mean, I think a lot of us agreed it was a little bit too much of top catering this year, which, you know, I'm sure it's hard for them to have challenges that really reflect what happens in a real restaurant. But, you know, all of the pressure and things like that are definitely reflective. So, yeah, I would like to do a little less catering on the show, but I think in general, definitely you had to demonstrate all the different skills of a chef. So
the catering shows, the wedding shows were not the ones that you loved. What were the shows that you had a problem with? The shows that came up, the episodes, the skills?
I think it's just, on the children's challenge where I didn't do that well, I think I just got so excited to be hanging out with kids and was just chatting it up with my little girl, and I just sort of wasn't concentrating on the food. So things like that where I just sort of let the challenges or let what was going on around me get ahead of the food, and so I just had to sort of refocus and concentrate on cooking.
Just in case our listeners didn't see the show, that was a show where basically you had a 10 or 11-year-old come in and work with you and create a menu for kids.
On the opposite side of the spectrum, in the finale, you got to pick your sous chef. The contestants got to pick their sous chefs from among some of the best chefs in the country, and you got to have Eric Repaire, who is one of the top chefs and certainly the top fish chef in the country, be your sous chef. What was that like?
It was crazy. You know, I was very starstruck when I saw Eric Repaire, so I just sort of snatched him up right away. And it was weird, you know, I was standing over him, like, telling him how to cut the fish, and he's like, Stephanie, I think I know how to cut. I said to Tom the next day, I was like, well, I actually had to recut the fish the next day because they weren't the right size.
Well, I mean, there comes a point where there's a certain level of expertise that is being tested in any chef, but there's also, you know, the reason you need to have a chef in a kitchen is because there may be two or three right ways of doing things. And when in your challenge, you had to make sure that it was your reflective of your style, not
your voice.
Not Chef
you wanted it to speak of your voice, not Eric Repaire's voice.
Exactly. You know, they asked us, they didn't show this on the show, but they asked us, you know, how we felt about not getting to have any influence from our sous chefs as far as, you know, flavors and things like that. And I was like, well, you know, of course, Eric Repaire and April and Dan Barber are amazing chefs, not even going to compare, but I was like, you know, we're really good chefs, too. You just don't know us yet. You know, like, we have our own style, and we can do good flavors, too. So I think we were really happy to have all of their help. But at the same time, yeah, like you said, we just wanted to be reflective of our own style.
So obviously having Eric Repaire as your sous chef can be a nerve-wracking experience. But at the same time, in a show a few episodes before that, you had one of the ex-contestants be your sous chef, Dale. That didn't work out that great either in certain aspect.
Yeah, you know, as soon as I saw Dale there, we've been friends for a long time. We used to work together, so I picked him right away. And then, you know, he ended up leaving the pork belly out, which I think, you know, in the end it was like a blessing in disguise. We ended up putting together the chicharrones dish, which the judges loved and all the guests loved. And, I love pork belly, but, you know, at the end of the day we came up with something great. So.
Okay, first of all, pork belly, what's not to love?
Yeah.
Second of all,
the word pork and it makes me pretty happy.
Second of all, just again for people who might not have seen the show, what happened is you guys were preparing for your menu for the next day, and Dale, this guy who was there to help you, ended up leaving one of your prime ingredients, the pork belly, out overnight.
That was a heartbreaker.
So.
That was really a heartbreaker, I have to say. For those of it, and I think that, you know, one of the things about Top Chef is for people who aren't in the restaurant business, there's a certain way to watch it. But in the industry, folks, a lot of people watch that show, and you watch the seasons prior to when you were on, and there's a real, I mean, if you're in the industry, there are real heartbreaks that people who aren't in the industry or sitting next to me don't get.
Right.
Do you find that?
They don't really know what goes, people not in the industry don't know exactly what goes into, you know, our everyday in the industry. And I think the show at least demonstrates a little bit of the difficulty and things like that. But even, you know, even still, it's hard to tell watching it on the TV exactly what we all go through to produce these meals.
Well, absolutely. But sitting as an industry person next with some industry people in the room and non-industry people in the room, the industry people go, oh, a lot more often than the others. Hey, we'll be back in just a moment talking with Stephanie Izzard, America's Top Chef. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. It's 11:25.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. It's Mark and Francis, the Restaurant Guys, from Stage Left and Captain Lombardi. And we're talking with America's Top Chef, Stephanie Izzard. Stephanie, you know, a topic that has come up with a lot of the folks we've had on the show and friends of ours in the industry, you know, like Tom Colicchio or Charlie Trotter or Charlie Palmer or Mario Batali, they talk about how, you know, there's a club that you're in when you reach a certain level of being a chef. And what it means is that, you know, whenever you go to whatever city you go to, you sort of call up other chefs there and you go and visit and maybe have dinner with them or hang out with them. And you're in that club now. Do you think that winning Top Chef has sort of cemented your place in that club and changed your life, your professional life, your social life in that way?
I think it's definitely a good starting off point to get, you know, to reach – become part of that little fraternity of chefs or what have you. But, you know, I think I still have to, from this point, I really need to prove that I do belong being in the club and just sort of show my stuff at my new restaurant and things like that. But, yeah, it's been great. I was hanging out with Daniel Balut at, like, 4 in New York, and, you know, that's definitely never happened to me before. So, it's exciting.
A little bit of bad news, Stephanie?
Yes.
All those guys in the club? Have to keep proving that they belong in the club.
Of course,
that is just the life we've chosen. You just gotta. Every day is a new test. Every day is a new opportunity to shine or to smell.
Oh, of course, yeah, I definitely know that. But yeah, that's what makes it all exciting. It's a tough business, but it's what we love to do, so it makes it fun.
And so, you have plans for a new restaurant, or you're searching for plans for a new restaurant?
I have some ideas in my head. I'm just starting to search for the perfect space. You know, I want to get it open sooner than later, but at the same time, not going to rush it. So just starting to look around Chicago and try to pick what neighborhood I want to be in, and we'll sort of see what happens.
And Chicago's a real food mecca. Your first restaurant was in Chicago. You definitely want your second place to be in Chicago as well?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I toyed with the idea of leaving. There's New York, which is huge, and there's other great cities. But Chicago's really, I think, becoming, you know, almost the top food city, I think, in the country. A lot of chefs are moving here to open places, and they just have a lot to offer. So I just want to, you know, stay and be part of that.
Well, I mean, it's pretty exciting out in Chicago, and I think one of the reasons is that the costs of operating out there are a little lower to get yourself started, and it seems to be a little less cutthroat than New York. And it's one heck of a food city, and I'm sure that your restaurant will add to that. We'll talk more after the news with Stephanie Izzard, America's Top Chef. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. It's 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC, with The Restaurant Guys.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Stephanie Izzard is America's Top Chef. She won the top honors at the Bravo TV reality series Top Chef, and she's here talking with us about her newfound fame. Stephanie, I read in your bio that one of your favorite dishes is crab rangoon, And your comment was, there's something about fried cream cheese that's irresistible. Now, I have to be honest with you. I've been in the restaurant business for about 20 years. I don't know what crab rangoon is, but from their follow-up sentence, it sounds disgusting. Can you share with us what is?
Crab rangoon is just it's a fried wonton that's filled with crab and cream cheese. And, you know, sometimes there's scallions and other things in there. I'm a big fan of cream cheese. So.
I'm against Francis. Crab rangoon is delicious, and he's an idiot.
I don't know. I've never had it. I thought that was really interesting. I do know that did not make an appearance in any of your dishes on Top Chef.
No, you know, I don't make fried cream cheese to serve to people. I just like to keep it for myself.
To make it for home.
Steph, I have to ask you a question now. Going back to the show, talking about the episodes that were just on, Spike, one of the other chefs, I felt like he made an egregious mistake when he called out Rick Tremonto, chef of owner of True for a long, long time, and Rick Tremonto Steakhouse, when he called him out for having frozen scallops in his walk-in box. Do you think that cost him the challenge right there?
Yes and no. You know, I think, you know, looking back and sort of seeing what he made, I'm sure that, you know, I don't think his dishes were, you know, as strong as they should have been that day anyways. But the whole thing with the frozen scallops was just, you know, and standing next to Spike when he started, you know, talking back to Rick Tremonto, I just sort of looked at him like, what are you doing?
You're doing it wrong.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, I actually, my friend was Rick Tremonto's sous chef, and he's like, yeah, we would never have frozen scallops. You know, that was all Bravo. So, you know, I sort of feel bad for Spike. He was all excited about using scallops. But, you know, a good chef, I guess, would, you know, realize that they need to make a change and not use them.
You gotta overcome that. And again, I just want to catch our listeners up who might not have seen the show. Basically, Spike gets to choose an ingredient. He chooses scallops. And afterwards, when he gets to the restaurant, he finds that the scallops are frozen. He's worried about it, but he still uses them. Then when the judges call him out and say, you shouldn't have used those frozen scallops, Spike basically turns around and says to Rick Tremonto, one of the best chefs in the world, and turns around and says, hey, chef, that's on you. You know, you shouldn't have frozen scallops in your walk-in box.
Yeah, there is the old rule. You don't have to cook with everything in the walk-in box. But, you know, that brings us to another point. Your style, you're pretty mellow, laid back. You get things done. You're no-nonsense as a chef. You've operated your own place, as I mentioned before. You know, we've been in the restaurant business a long time. There are lots of different styles, but I would say that more often than not, we find, and this isn't in either of our kitchens, this isn't the way it works, but it's very hard to find, I don't want to say it's a hostile environment, but the kitchen is a very rough and tumble, and let's say it's usually an aggressive environment. You seem to have a different style. Would you say that's an accurate assessment of your style?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if you walked into the kitchen at Scylla, we're all just sort of, you know, hanging out, singing along with the music, having a good time, and we're still getting things done, and, you know, I'm still keeping an eye, and people definitely respect me and want to do things the right way, but I don't, when you scream at people, it's not going to make them do any better. It's going to make them, you know, like you less and not really care about, you know, helping you out, whereas if you show respect for your cooks and don't scream at everybody all the time and try to keep the kitchen a little more mellow, I think that everybody just gets the job done better.
I always try and express to my chefs and the cooks and the front of house people in my restaurant that it's so much more powerful to sit down and talk to somebody and say, here's where you're letting the organization down. Here's where you're not getting the job done. And here's the way you can improve yourself. And to do that behind closed doors in a civil discussion and talk directly to people, it just works better than screaming and berating and, you know, Gordon Ramsaying people.
Yeah, you know, I worked at a restaurant in Arizona, and the chef, you know, just screamed at us all the time, saying we were trying to sabotage his restaurant. And just, you know, it was so uncomfortable that when he was actually not there, everybody's just talking about how much they dislike him. And, you know, you don't want to put your best foot forward for someone that you don't have any respect for because they're yelling at you all the time. I think it's definitely a good idea. You know, whenever I had to talk to one of my employees, I definitely just pulled them down in the office and just have a civil conversation. You know, we're all adults.
But don't you find that that's still more than in other workplaces? Though I think it is changing, and especially it's changing in the best places. I mean, you know, in Thomas Keller's kitchen, you're not going to hear the volume go very high. But I still find in good restaurants, in restaurants that you think would be more professional, I find there to be, you know, as I go to my friends' restaurants and there is a level of aggressiveness and volume that is and you know hostility that is and competition that's sort of there in the kitchen environment that's not there in other workplaces. I mean, I'm not talking about your place, but in other places you've worked, have you seen that? Do you agree with my?
Did you see it on Top Chef?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely agree, and I think most places I've worked, there's definitely, of course, it's the stress that's involved, and then it's all the egos that are involved. To be honest, you know, I think that. A lot of, you know, mainly the males, I must say, in the industry just have a little bit of the ego thing going on. And so when you put them all in a kitchen together under the stress situations, you know, people are going to start, you know, the volume's going to rise a little bit. But, yeah, I hope to, you know, I never want to have one of those environments for myself.
And it, you know, I don't mean to say that pulling somebody aside and talking to them is always going to work because different things work for different people. But when that doesn't work, you need to move that person out of your organization to move a new person in.
Well, exactly.
And you brought it up. We weren't going to bring it up unless you did. But, you know, you are the first woman Top Chef.
I am, which is very exciting. You know, I mean, through my career, I've never really thought of myself as, you know, woman or male chef. You know, I just try to be the best that I can be. But, you know, I think it's great to just show that women, you know, do represent some great people in this industry. And I hope that there just starts to be more and more, you know. I don't know why there aren't as many women chefs as men, but I think this season we just proved that there's a lot of great female chefs out there. So
I want to say something, and I don't mean this disparaging in any way. To me, it wasn't that important that you were a woman winning Top Chef. It seemed like, you know, I'm reading the blogs and I'm looking at you know, what people are saying, and people are really hyped up on the fact that you're a female chef winning this competition. I guess I've seen enough really highly skilled women chefs now that I don't think it's such an anomaly that I didn't think it was that outrageous to begin with.
Right. No, I agree. I mean, there are definitely some strong women throughout the industry, and I think that, you know, maybe it's just people are excited that finally a woman, you know, won Top Chef, which is its own little world, you know. But, yeah, you know, I just wanted to win as being, you know, the best contestant there, not necessarily, you know, male or female.
Yeah, but let's face it, even in the first season, even the women weren't rooting for Tiffany.
Which I feel, you know, I've talked to Tom, and, you know, supposedly she's a great person, so I hope to get to meet her someday, but she definitely didn't come across as the nicest.
She was obviously super talented, and obviously they wanted her to look, you know, in a certain light. And that takes me to my next question. What part of this was TV, and what parts of this were reality?
You know, I think that definitely, you know, they have to do some editing. It's they tape, you know, thousands and thousands of hours of footage, and they decide what they want to show. And I think that, you know, in that sense, they get to sort of make characters out of people. But, you know, I think they were all based on, you know, real characteristics of the people. They're just really magnified, you know. Lisa can be very negative, but, you know, she also does smile a lot in real life, too. So, you know, and Andrew is a little bit nuts, but, you know, he can be slightly normal from time to time, too. So
slightly normal. I hope that no one ever describes. I hope that no one ever describes me that way.
Yeah, I guess that wasn't the word. You know, he can be slightly more tame, and he just really focuses on the food from time to time. But, you know, they just sort of magnified the interesting characteristics in people. So I think that's the only thing that, you know, a little bit less than reality. But what's great is, I mean, as far as the challenges go, you know, when they say we have 20 minutes, we really did have 20 minutes. And when we only have this much money to spend, we really did have that. So at least they, you know, all of that part's realistic, which is great.
I have to say, you couldn't, and we had Tom Colicchio on the show. We've had him a couple times. We had him right before the first show season aired. And, you know, when you have somebody like Colicchio involved, and he laid down some pretty significant conditions, you know, preconditions for his participation. And, you know, he's got a lot of integrity, that guy. And I think that, you know, that really shines through in the tenor of the show. I think it's one of the reasons it's different than the other TV reality shows.
Yeah, I think Top Chef was really lucky to get someone, you know, like Tom to participate. And it just shows that there is, you know, it is about the food. And if Tom Colicchio is going to sit there and judge and put his name on it, then, you know, even though through the TV you can't taste the food, you have to sort of believe that he's, you know, judging fairly.
Yeah, no, he is like the most trusted chef in America now, I think, probably because of this.
You know, Stephanie, when we come back, I'm going to give you a chance to judge the judges.
Ooh, we'll be back in just a moment with Stephanie Izard, and you have all the commercial break to think about it. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. It's 1146.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. It's Mark and Francis, the Restaurant Guys from Stage Left and Kaplan Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. And we're talking with Stephanie Izard. She is America's Top Chef, winner of the most recent season of the Bravo TV reality series. And Mark's question that he cooked up, has been waiting all show to ask you is, you spent weeks and weeks having the judges, the panel of judges, or rotating judges, judge your food. And you know, every time, you know, it's funny, every time we do a job interview, we realize that we're being interviewed by the candidate. And every time you're being judged, you know, all the contestants and all the audience are judging the judges and judging their ability to judge. Every time a restaurant critic writes a review, if that restaurant critic stays at that venue, that paper for a long time, the readers sort of go to those restaurants and we judge the critics. Here's your chance. Will you give us some insight into the various judges and their different styles and who you think might be better or not so good?
Sure. You know, I think, you know, Gail Simmons, she's a sweetheart, but she's just very honest and she, you know, tries to always point out a little bit of the positive, you know, but then she'll also just be completely honest with you. But I think she has a nice approach where she's not just, you know, making you feel really bad about, you know, a bad decision you made. She'll point out, you know, that maybe you're on the right track, but you sort of made some missteps. So
it's not all about the slam.
Yes, of course. And then, you know, Tom Colicchio, of course, he has a style where he really just wants to know what your reason was for doing something. He'll always ask, you know, what were you thinking when you did this or what were you trying to go for? Which, to him, that's just a very important part of everything. Not necessarily, you know, of course, the flavors and things like that, but he wants to see if you reached your goal.
Well,
so that was really interesting to me that that's so important to him.
Well, you know what? I think that when you're in this business, you realize that it's not, that results obviously are everything. Okay, results are what's most important and really the only thing that's important. But when you're in this business, you realize that there are steps that take you to those results. And if you make a misstep on one of those steps, your result's not going to be what you want it to be.
Right, right. You know, other than that, there's Padma. And, you know, a lot of people ask me, what in the world does Padma have to do with food or anything? And, you know, she does like to eat, and she does have some insightful things to say. But I would say, you know, all in all, she'd probably be, I would think by all of us, you know, her opinion is probably, you know, we didn't listen to her quite as much. You know, she does know a little bit about what she's talking about, but when you've got Gail Simmons and Tom Colicchio and, you know, Rich Tremont and all these great guest judges, you know, we definitely sort of gear more towards what they're...
Well, she's hot and she's dramatic when she does the knife thing.
She's very pretty.
And she does
she
the
is very pretty. we got to look at her at judges' table.
And she's very dramatic with
you
the knife
what?
Thing.
You know what? I'm probably being kinder than a lot of people have been to her, but I don't find her saying things that are dumb or things that
no,
are
I think she's very
that are out of place. I, you know, maybe
they
her
show does. That's all.
you know, it's funny. I have to say the thing about I think that's a very kind show, and I think Tom Colicchio is a kind man. And you know, when we had him on the show, he said, you know, one of the things that's the hardest thing for me to do with this show is I'll be in the kitchen and I'll be asking people questions when they're doing things, and I'll see that they're doing things wrong, and sometimes I'll ask them questions that if they listen to my question, they might re-examine what they're doing and think about it and answer that question themselves and come up with it. But he said, the hardest thing for me is I've always viewed my role as a teacher, and you think he's a kind man who wants to see everyone do well. And that's the tenor the show has taken on. For the most part, but except the whole pack your knives and go thing. When they say when you're dismissed from the show, they say pack your knives and go. I'm like, oh, that's so cold.
Yeah, it's like, ouch.
Couldn't you just say, I'm sorry? You know, wouldn't that be nicer?
Yeah, that would be nicer. But, you know, people really want to see the drama, and they people tune in, I'm sure, a little bit from week to week. See the people also that drama, so.
I guess there's got to be a little drama. But I'll tell you, for me, I enjoyed, and it seemed like you guys enjoyed, when Tom was expediting for you guys. When Tom was working in the kitchen with you guys, and he was the expediter while you guys each cooked your dishes.
It was fun. You know, at first, he has, you know, every chef has their own way of sort of calling out and picking up, and he confused me for a second there. But it was cool because it was almost, he was our colleague rather than our judge. Mm-hmm. And it was just, you know, a lot of fun to sort of see Tom, not that he was cooking, but he was sort of like in action, you know, it's like we actually were working with Tom, so it was pretty cool.
Well, and now you film the show, and then you're bound by, you're contractually bound upon forfeit of like a limb and all the prize money or something to not tell anybody how it turned out, right?
That's right.
And so you went to watch the final episode with your family, and even your family didn't know if you'd won or not, right?
Yeah, it was, you know, and it was definitely a hard thing not to tell my parents, but in the end, it was still priceless to see their face when they.
Well, actually, it wasn't priceless. It was $100,000.
Yeah, that's true.
it was precisely $100,000, and quite worth it, I think.
That's true. But you know, it just made it all worth it. The whole time I just kept saying to them, you know, I tried my best, which you know isn't a lie, but it definitely made it sound like things didn't turn out so well. So, you know, it was just a fun little game I got to play.
And so it must have been like, you know, you won the Miss America pageant or something at the moment that it was announced and your family was there and you were watching the whole thing. Was that a hell of a moment?
Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, it's sort of like, you know, I don't really want to win Miss America, so I'd say it was more like winning the Olympics or like the Super Bowl or something. But people were just really excited, and I had a bunch of friends around and my family, and it was a lot of fun.
Kind of like you won the luge gold medal, huh?
Yeah.
So how long do you have to wait from the time the show ends?
Till it's aired.
The Puerto Rico part was filmed about a month ago.
Oh.
The rest of it was way back in October. So mm-hmm. We had a long break there, but had to keep it secret for about a month.
Well, Stephanie, I have to say it was great to watch you over the season of Top
great
Chef.
Job.
And I look forward to having you on the show when you open your next restaurant and all the great things you're going to do in your career.
Thank you. Yeah, I'll keep you guys posted.
All cool. Right, thanks. Stephanie Izard, America's Top Chef. You can find out more about the series through our website, restaurantguysradio.com, or go to Bravo TV. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. It's 11:55.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. It's Mark and Francis, the Restaurant Guys.
So just like that, another season of Top Chef is gone. Season 4, we'll just have to wait for season 5 to come.
We've been doing this show a long time.
Long time.
We had Tom Kalicki. We had the casting director of Top Chef on before the show ever went on the air.
Yeah, remember? I think it was like first week or second week. They were right. They had just started.
That's wild.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Wild. It's good stuff. Hey, I want to talk to our listeners. I want to talk to everybody out there, both in podcast and in radio. On Tuesday, July 1st, we're going to be doing our show from 11 to 12 Eastern Standard Time as usual, except for one little thing. The whole show is going to be a call-in show. So call us from wherever you are, whether you're in Australia or Chicago or California.
It's this coming Tuesday, July 1st, and it's from 11 to 12. And if you listen to us normally on podcast and you mm-hmm. want to call in and participate, you can get us streaming on WCTCAM.com and listen to the show live. And call in and talk to the Restaurant Guys.
WCTCAM.com. Listen live. You can listen from wherever you are via your computer, and then you'll have a chance to call in. It's something we don't do very, very much, and Francis and I thought that it was time to let everybody give us a call and from wherever you may be.
And we want to talk to local listeners, but if you listen from far away, we get a real kick out of, and I know a lot of our far away listeners listen on podcasts, we get a real kick out of hearing from you. We'll have an 800 number for you to call.
That's 888-545-9282, but we'll obviously talk about give out the number that day as well.
Yeah, so the further away you are, the more we'd like you to call. And we can build a station. The station will pay for that on their 800 number. trying to get the maximum utility out of the station. No, that's not really true. But I don't know. How does that work? The station pays for
it. It's going to be fun. And we're going to do lots of giveaways that day. We have some giveaways from our friends at Le Creuset. Are some really, really nice prizes that day. Some restaurant prizes. It's going to be a fun, fun show. And you can talk to us and ask us whatever you want.
It's like the Restaurant Guys Carnival. Carnival on the air.
We'll be serving Zapolis. There's going to be some funnel cake.
Yeah, but I can't shove those through the microphone.
Some corn dogs.
Mark and I will be eating all that stuff ourselves in the booth.
Little man on stilts.
Hey, listen, that's a guest. Tuesday, July 1st, 2008. So we hope we hear from you then. We hope you've enjoyed hearing from us today. I know we certainly have. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. The time is 12 noon.